It is Monday. Happy Memorial Day if you are in the United States. And if you're in the armed services, past or present, thank you so much for your service. But as it is Monday, we're talking video game releases for the week. Tuesday, May 30th, tomorrow, has a bunch of interesting stuff coming out. Chief among them for me is Star Trek Bridge Crew, the VR experience of being inside a Star Trek bridge on the Enterprise or Enterprise-like type experience. This is going to be released for PlayStation VR, Oculus Rift, and HTC Vive. I could not be more excited. I played this several times at several events over the last couple of years as it's approached release, and it's pretty darn cool in co-op. You are sitting at one of several stations on the bridge of a Federation-class vessel. You are science officer or engineering or the captain or, you know, the usual stuff you see in those shows. And you have to do your role as every other player does their role. It's physical. You're pushing buttons, reaching out with your hands in VR, pressing buttons, moving sliders, allocating resources to try to complete the missions that you have to face. Really hectic and fun in VR, really hectic and fun multiplayer co-op. You can turn in your seat and see the other players sitting next to you in their stations. I'm very excited to finally get my hands on the final version of Star Trek Bridge Crew. Episode 5 of The Walking Dead: A New Frontier hits PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One tomorrow as well. People that are fans of that series know that Telltale is continually doing great work there. PC players who love authentic war simulations will enjoy Rising Storm 2 Vietnam, coming out on Steam. This is a 64-player multiplayer Vietnam war game. Looks pretty intense. The sequel to Rising Storm 2. I'm very thrilled to finally try Danger Zone, the new PlayStation 4 game that's coming out from some alumni of Criterion. This is the crash mode from Burnout made into its own game. Ah, man, that was one of my favorite things of those old Burnout games. And those old Burnout games were some of my favorite things. So I'm very excited to pick this one up. It's coming out on PlayStation 4 on Tuesday, May 30th. It's called Danger Zone. If you're into laughing while playing games or insulting people, Oh Sir, the Insult Simulator is also coming out on PlayStation 4 on Tuesday. This is a tongue-in-cheek game where you are constructing insults out of sentence fragments and strange descriptors. It looks fun and silly, although I don't know if we need more insults in the world right now. Maybe these will make insults a little more creative on the internet. That would be nice. On Wednesday, May 31st, Tokyo 42 is released on PC and Xbox One. It's coming out for PlayStation 4 a little bit later. This is a really fascinating looking game. It's set in a future Tokyo. It's a top-down, isometric, stealth action game that they describe as the love child of Syndicate and the original Grand Theft Auto. But one look at Tokyo 42 in motion makes you realize it's very unique, very interesting. The art style is so captivating. It's something you should definitely check out if you haven't heard of it. Tokyo 42 coming out on Wednesday. Then on Friday, June 2nd, perhaps the biggest release of the week, Tekken 7 comes out for PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. It has been almost 8 years since the last main series Tekken game was released on consoles, and this is a tried and true classic fighting game series from Bandai Namco. Will it live up to that kind of anticipation? Especially with such great fighting games out right now, like Injustice 2, which just landed last week. It remains to be seen if Tekken still has that kind of name recognition and fan anticipation after almost 8 years without a mainline title. But I'm excited to check it out. Tekken 7 coming out on Friday, June 2nd. So no summer lull. We got big video games coming out week after week, and you can bet I'll be talking about as many of them as I can right here on this station. Hey, if you're celebrating the holiday weekend here in the States and you're looking for a fun activity to do with your friends and you're able to swing by a store today and grab one, I highly recommend Happy Salmon. Happy Salmon is a game that I've been playing all weekend long with friends and family. It's a tabletop game, very simple in its approach, but it's one that I guarantee will be a huge hit for your friends and family. I love this game. It's from North Star Games. Very simple, very cheap. You can get it on Amazon for less than $15. The idea is everybody has a deck of cards in their hand with four different gestures written on them, and each of the gestures requires a partner to complete it. You have high five, which is just as it sounds. Complete a high five. You have pound it, which is just to do a fist bump with somebody else. You have switcheroo, which makes you switch places with someone. And you have the titular happy salmon. Happy salmon makes you extend your arm and meet the extended arm of a friend and then smack their forearm with your hand as they smack yours in a flippy flopping fish tail kind of way. So those four gestures constitute your deck. On the count of three, everybody flips over the top card on their deck at the same time, and you are trying to complete the gestures with somebody else. And when you do, you're able to discard that card. First person to discard their entire deck wins the game. So everybody is frantically shouting out the gesture that they need to complete, and you're looking for a partner to have the same card showing at the same time you do. You can pass and move a card to the back of the pile, but you do have to complete your entire deck as fast as possible. It's zany. It's wacky. People are shouting and moving around because of the switcheroo. Everybody's running. It's a game you play on your feet, and you can play it up to six people. It is just a riot. We had such a good time playing this one. I highly recommend it. If you're looking for something a little more cerebral and a little less wacky, easy recommendation for today or any day when you've got friends around is a game called Codenames. It is a game where you lay out cards in front of you in a grid pattern, and each of them is a noun, is an item or object in the world. And there are captains of two teams. You can play with large groups of people. The captains have access to a color-coded grid card that tells them which of the nouns on the grid are theirs and which are the other team's. And then they have to try to get their team to guess their nouns without guessing any of the other team's nouns. They're trying to tick off all of the cards that belong to their team without getting any of the other team's cards. And to do that, they're able to give one-word clues. But the trick is, you're trying to get your cards guessed before the other team's cards are guessed. So you're trying to get multiple cards in one round. And the only way to do that is to come up with a one-word clue that can apply to multiple words on the board. So there's a lot of skill here. You're trying to come up with a clue that will get your team to guess multiple of your words without any of the other team's words. So you are able to tell the clue and then how many words on the board it applies to. And it's a wonderful lateral thinking puzzle because you come up with these wonderful associations between words. So, for example, you might find the word spring is in your grid of nouns. And you might think, oh, spring, that's a thing that you compress that goes in and out. It could be a synonym for jump. It could be a season. There are a lot of ways to use words in really interesting ways to try to use alternate methods. And you find yourself listening to your team debate which words they want to select based on your clue. And you hear them coming up with valid reasons why your clue works for a whole bunch of words that you didn't anticipate. It is lots and lots of fun. It's the kind of game that once a group plays it, you're hard-pressed to not want to play it right away again. Highly recommend Codenames for a light, fun, inexpensive tabletop experience that's perfect for group gatherings. Square Enix announced their next role-playing game coming in 2018. It's called Lost Sphear. Sphear spelled S-P-H-E-A-R. And it's developed by the makers of I Am Setsuna, which was a retro Japanese role-playing game inspired by Chrono Trigger that came out a couple of years ago. Lost Sphear looks very similar in style and tone. It is a throwback to those old console role-playing games that I grew up with. Top-down, isometric view, party-based, turn-based combat. It looks like a very slow-paced dialogue system with some ponderous overarching themes. But I'm pretty excited because the main character's name is Kanata. Spelled with a K and only one N and one T, but Kanata nonetheless. So, the young boy Kanata, who's on a journey to save his disappearing home village in Lost Sphear, sounds like something I might need to dip my toe in, being a Kanata myself. Anyway, this is a game that's coming to PlayStation 4 and Windows PC and Switch. So it'll be something that's playable on Switch when it releases in early 2018. I Am Setsuna, the previous game from Tokyo RPG Factory, which is the developers of Lost Sphear, was also a Switch launch title. So these guys know how to make games for Switch, PlayStation 4, Windows PC. If you're into retro Japanese role-playing games and you're into playing characters named Kanata, you might be interested in Lost Sphear. And it looks like it's official. The PlayStation 3 is over. The final models of PlayStation 3 were manufactured in Japan, and Sony has officially ended shipments of PlayStation 3 models in preparation for the console's end of life. The news came on the official Japanese PlayStation website that shipments have now ended, and the PlayStation 3's life has come to an end. I'm actually surprised they were still making PlayStation 3s. I suppose an inexpensive way to jump into the console world if you're not a console gamer, but the Xbox 360, which was even more successful than the PlayStation 3, ended production over a year ago. So the fact that PlayStation 3 were still being made in Japan is a bit of a surprise for me. PlayStation 3, of course, was released in November of 2006. So it lasted over 10 years, new models being made. It's pretty darn good. And Sony sold 80 million units of PlayStation 3. Not too shabby globally. So pour one out for the PlayStation 3. Fire up your PlayStation 4 and move into the modern era. But cue up that montage of fond PlayStation 3 memories as it drifts into the sunset. The retro 2D side-scrolling version of Sonic the Hedgehog called Sonic Mania, which is Sega's latest attempt to revitalize that character's 2D heritage, is finally got a release date. It was supposed to be out in March of this year, but it got delayed into summer. We now know, as of today, that August 15th will be the release date for Sonic Mania on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Windows PC, and Nintendo Switch. Switch, of course, I think the perfect console for this game. It's a throwback to those old 2D Genesis Sonic games. In fact, some of the levels in Sonic Mania will be direct reboots, redos, revitalizations, updates of the classic Sonic stages from Sonic the Hedgehog, Tails, and Knuckles games. This looks really fun and really cool. There's a bunch of new stages as well. The game is only going to cost $19.99, which is pretty cool. It's available for pre-order now on Steam, Xbox Game Store, and it will be out August 15th, so we'll be able to play some old-school ring-gathering Sonic stuff. In fact, the art style is not updated. It looks like it's sprites. It looks like the old Genesis sprites of my youth. Pretty excited about this one. I really want Sonic to be great again. And Sega has tried a bunch of times to dip back in that well. Maybe Sonic Mania will be the one that pulls it off. Just got done playing a couple of hours of Star Trek Bridge Crew, the new VR exclusive title from Ubisoft and Red Storm Studios. All about giving you the experience of being on the crew of a Federation starship. You can play a number of different roles. I played Captain. This is an awesome game. Also, I should mention, it's available on Vive, on Oculus, and on PlayStation VR. I played on Oculus using the touch controllers. And I played one mission with one friend and another mission with two friends. I think you got to have at least three people playing or four people playing in order for this to really be its potential. You can play the game single player, jumping around among the different roles on the ship. You can teleport into any role that's being controlled by AI at any time if you want to have more control over what's being done. But the whole idea of this game is, much like in the Star Trek TV show and films, there's a division of labor on the bridge of a starship. And each role has its functions. There are a few functions that are shared among any of the roles. But for the most part, you're seated, you're staring at your console, you have certain information that you have that other players potentially do not have, and functionality to control parts of the ship that you have that other players don't as well. And you have to play your role. So the idea of jumping around between roles, I think, really defeats the purpose. And so much of the fun of Star Trek Bridge Crew is in the communication. You are all in a virtual space. You're able to see each other. The game renders your character in real time. You move your arms around, flail them around, be silly. Your on-screen avatar does the same. It even has lip syncing for when you speak. And it's all about communication. It's all about the captain talking to each of the stations, asking for information, delivering orders, the stations alerting him to certain updates that they have or things that they're able to do. Helm is plotting courses and steering the ship. Tactical is raising and lowering shields and shooting photons and scanning things. And engineering is assigning power among different subsystems and deciding what's prioritized and what isn't. It is a teamwork game, and if you play it solo, I don't think you get the best of what this game has to offer. But when you do have a team, and like I said, I played it with three. I'm excited to play it with four tomorrow. But my goodness, is it a lot of fun. I mean, it really delivers that fantasy that old Star Trek fans have, like myself, to pilot a vessel and do the stuff that's on the TV show. It really delivers that experience. All of the interface is super slick. It's all touch panels, selecting things, 3D images beaming up in front of your face, and you're selecting, finding out what's being scanned, looking up and seeing the main display that you see from the television show and looking out into the cosmos through that big main display. The intro mission is long, and it kind of lays out all the different kinds of things you'll be doing, moving through the galaxy, getting to a location, scanning it, avoiding mines or shooting the mines with phasers or torpedoes. It's pretty darn fun. And the end of the very first prelude mission is the Korobashi Maru. The Korobashi Maru from the show. I mean, it is the unwinnable final test to see how long you can survive against a Klingon assault at the edge of the neutral zone and trying to save as many crew members of the Korobashi Maru as possible. It's tense, it's exciting, it's unwinnable, but it's so fun. And interacting with my teammates, trying to tell them what to do as the captain, assessing all the different information that's coming to me, making tactical decisions as they're, you know, scanning new vessels and shooting torpedoes and cruising us around through the galaxy. Man, it's a lot of fun. It's relatively simplistic, but it plays like the best kind of team building teamwork game. And if you have four friends or three friends and yourself who all have VR headsets, I can't recommend this highly enough, especially if you're a Star Trek fan. But even as a non-Star Trek fan, it's just a wonderful game about communication and about teamwork. I'll talk more about it as the week continues, but my initial impressions are very, very positive. Well, Ubisoft changed its logo. I guess that's a big deal. I guess that's news that I need to report to you. No longer is the logo blue and white. Now it is monochromatic, white and transparent. Still got a swirl. Still that Ubisoft swirl that you probably know from playing Ubisoft games. Their official statement says, "Today we create worlds. Worlds that live as video games, comics, movies, TV shows, books, and amusement park rides. Our new logo is minimalist, modern, and monochromatic." Okay. All right, Ubisoft, go on with your bad self. I don't understand why they did this now when I think it was just last year. Maybe it was the year before. I think it was just last year where they had their big anniversary. Feels like a time to update your logo. But right before E3, Ubisoft changing up the logo, making it monochromatic. Looks kind of cool. I don't know what you think of it, but there you go. New Ubisoft. Also new font on the word Ubisoft. It's kind of cool. You've probably heard of Twitch Plays Pokemon and Twitch Plays Dark Souls, and Twitch does a whole lot of things. The group mind, the group think of Twitch chat leveraged to try to figure out a cooperative way to get through a video game. Well, I guess the stock market is kind of a game as well, and somebody has decided that Twitch can play stock market. A software developer named Mike has decided to put up $50,000 of his own cash and allow people watching a Twitch stream to decide how it's invested in the stock market. They're able to vote for trades in real time, and an algorithm that Mike wrote tallies up those votes and then submits the trades. So he has relinquished all control over this. Well, all control maybe is a little strong. He knows what the algorithm is finding. But ostensibly, he's allowing the Twitch to decide how his money gets invested. Now, the algorithm is also programmed to shut things down if the tally dips below $25,000. So he's really only risking $25,000. But that's still a pretty significant chunk of change to put in the hands of strangers. Mike was asked if he was worried about losing his money quickly. He said initially he did, but he has gained a lot of confidence in the group mind over time. If you look at his website, stockstream.live, you can check in as this is going. As of my recording, the total tally for Mike's funds is $50,017.95. So Twitch has not lost him any money, which is already pretty surprising, but it has only gained him $17.95. So not a huge swing there, but I think all of us would have thought that Twitch would immediately lose him $25,000, which it has not done. I think people are actually taking this seriously and are actually trying to improve this guy's stock portfolio. So what do you think about this? Do you think that there is wisdom in the group mind? Do you think that if people can solve Pokemon and Dark Souls in Twitch, you might want to give them your money and see what they do with it? Mike certainly thinks so. You can tune in on this one, as I said, on stockstream.live if you're interested. I don't know if I want to gamify my investments, but it's pretty cool to see somebody doing it. Got to tell you about the latest update to my favorite game, Heroes of the Storm. I'm sure you've heard me talk a lot about Heroes of the Storm on my various shows. It is my daily addiction. As much as I play everything, I play Heroes of the Storm more often and more frequently. It's just the game that's got its hooks in me and has had its hooks in me for years now. In fact, this week marks the 2-year anniversary of Heroes of the Storm, and Blizzard is celebrating for a full week by having 2 different quests, daily quests that players can log in on. And if you play one game in any mode all through June 12th, you will get a loot box, a free loot box, which is pretty cool. It has all of the new Heroes of the Storm 2.0 loot potential in it. Also, there is a one-time quest for playing 3 games of any type. And you will get some cool swag. You will get some cool bling to outfit your characters. A banner with the 2-year logo. A portrait with the 2-year logo. and a spray with the two-year logo. It's pretty cool that they're doing this, especially like the daily loot boxes. I'm playing daily anyway, but it's a cool way to capitalize on the momentum that they got from the 2.0 launch and from the big Overwatch cross-play rewards to get people in every single day. It's fun to open those loot boxes, I gotta say, and I've been having a lot of fun with the game. If you're not playing Heroes of the Storm, it's free. I know, they're not sponsoring me or anything. I don't get any money for it. I just love the game that much. I just want more people to play it. I can't believe I've been playing for over 2 years. I was on the technical alpha of Heroes of the Storm. The game certainly has changed a lot in that time, but I love it, and it's a pretty cool event. Not to be outdone, Blizzard's other big franchise, probably its biggest franchise at this point. I would venture to guess that World of Warcraft is now not the biggest franchise, that Overwatch is. Overwatch, big announcement. The new lunar base Horizon Lunar Colony map is available on the public test realm. It's coming to Overwatch. It is narratively explains some of Winston's backstory. He was raised there on the moon colony, where they had genetically modified gorillas growing up alongside other humans and other gorilla test subjects. They were testing the effects of long-term life on the moon. This is the base where Winston was raised. And so this is a return to that base. Even more interestingly, there will be gameplay ramifications because this map introduces low gravity modes for Overwatch. How is that going to affect the game, affect the meta of the game? Pretty wild stuff, if you ask me. I'm kind of excited to try it on the PTR myself. It kind of eats Lawbreakers lunch, right? Lawbreakers is having its big coming out party at E3 this year. It's been talking a lot about being an arena multiplayer shooter that messes with gravity. And all of a sudden here, Overwatch adds a mode, adds a map where they can mess with gravity too. So I wonder if Cliff Bleszinski and company are kind of ruining this news announcement, but I think fans of Overwatch have a lot to be excited for. A new map brings a whole new strategies, and this low gravity mode sounds just bonkers. If you guys are Overwatch players, I would love to hear if you're trying it on the PTR, if you're excited for this one. It will probably hit the main servers of the game and the console versions of the game in the next few weeks. Big, big stuff from Blizzard, big stuff for Overwatch. So let me know in a call-in. I'd love to hear your take on this news from Overwatch and whether you're excited to try the low gravity mode in particular. Here's a call-in now from E-Man, who's, like a lot of people, correcting me on a horrible mispronunciation. I have to turn in my geek card after talking about Star Trek Bridge Crew. But I promise I really do like Star Trek. I just don't know how to pronounce stuff sometimes.
Hey, Jeffy. This is E-Man. I love you. Love your shows. I was just listening to that segment about the Bridge Crew. Is that what it's called? The VR thing? And just a couple things. Pretty sure it's not the Korobashi, but the Kobayashi Maru. Anyway, you're probably getting a lot of crap about that. But more importantly, I was wondering if it's just based on the original series, because you said you were saying show instead of shows, and I hope not, because the original series was not nearly as good as the other series, in my opinion. The movies are all right, but I mean, I'd rather even watch Enterprise than the original series. Shame, I know. But the 90s Trek is where it's at. Best TV writing in history, right? Anyway, appreciate you. Peace.
Thanks, E-Man. Many apologies on that Kobayashi Maru. Kobayashi? Oh, man. I think I got it confused with the name of the dude from Usual Suspects. Anyway, I apologize. I got a lot of tweets and emails about that one from disgruntled Star Trek fans. I'm so sorry. But the game's fantastic. I played a bunch more of it today. We did a four stack of players. Co-op in VR is the future. Having physical presence of your friends, being able to map the lip sync and map the hands, it really is transformative. It feels like you're hanging out in a physical space with each other. And seated in the bridge of the Aegis Starship is, it's really cool because there's a physical relationship you have to everybody. That guy's behind me, that guy's to the left of me. It's very, very cool. And you're doing the Star Trek stuff. Now, to your question, E-Man, I think I kind of led you to believe that it's original series stuff, but I think it's really more J.J. Abrams Star Trek vibe. It's kind of nonspecific, but it definitely has the sort of high-tech sheen on all of the control panels that the J.J. Abrams Trek reboots had. So I think that's kind of where it lives visually, but it's a nondescript Star Trek universe. Unfortunately, you can only play as either human or Vulcan. It doesn't give you the full breadth of different kinds of alien races for you to select your character, and that's a little bit of a bummer. But the missions themselves are so fun, especially with three of your closest friends playing the other roles. The division of labor, we found ourselves starting to talk like Star Trek, calling the captain sir and reporting things in the way you do, the way you hear those characters report them. You know, shields ready, captain. Torpedoes armed, captain. Energized transporter. Energizing, captain. It's so cool, man. It really, really found a way to make the very slow-paced sort of data entry mechanics really fun. And it's because you're working together as a team. And it's because no one person can do everything in a mission. You have to all share responsibilities, and what I do affects what you do. And that's where all the fun is. But it's another example of the thing I talk about all the time in VR, where a slower pace works. If you were playing that game on a 2D screen, although I know a lot of people talk about Artemis, the live action game that you can play with a bunch of iPads and a big projection screen. They bring it around to various conventions. I actually got to try it, at a PAX one time. But I know a lot of people compare it to that. It's very similar, but I think because of the VR, the ability that VR allows to make things more interesting, more complex, you're not just using iPads, you're actually getting 3D representations of stuff. It's next level. And if you have any VR device and some friends that also have VR, you got to play it. Highly recommend Star Trek Bridge Crew. I'll probably be talking about it more this week because I'm still loving it. Holy smokes. Polygon this morning is reporting on how voice chat will reportedly work for the Nintendo Switch, and it's a little bit worrisome. Evidently, accessories manufacturer Hori will be releasing a Nintendo Switch headset alongside Splatoon 2 this summer, and it's one of the very first of its kind for the console. And Polygon got a hold of the illustrated instructions for how it's going to connect to the Switch. It's written in Japanese, but it's pretty clear based on the graphics that it's going to be a kind of ridiculous process. It comes with a splitter that you connect the headset into that then splits the cord into two lines, one of which goes into your Switch and the other goes into your cell phone. You need to have your cell phone on and operating at all times while playing Switch games if you want to use voice chat. Now, Nintendo had been explicit that they had wanted to run voice chat through an app all the way back when the console was first announced. They haven't talked about it recently, but it looks like that's the plan, that this app, which is also meant to give players access to online lobbies and other social features, they haven't talked about it. There's no release date for it, but it looks like the only way to do voice chat is going to be to plug your cell phone in to this weird dongle that looks like a Splatoon squid in a certain way. Oh my goodness. This is really bad. I know Nintendo has never been strong on the online functionality tip. They've never been big into making things easy or slick for people that want to use voice chat in their games. Friends codes were always a hassle. But this is like a new level of weird that you have to have this app running on a smart device that's also plugged into the splitter to your headset. It turns out you don't have to use the splitter unless, that is, you care about hearing the game's audio. Because you can use the app and just plug your headset right into your phone, but you're not going to get any of the game's audio. So the only way to mix the game's audio and your voice chat is to use this weird dongle and split the audio between these two things. It's so janky and so weird. I guess it's classic Nintendo. But oh my goodness, this... I don't understand how this gets past the design phase. We'll see more, obviously, as this gets announced in the West and we get an actual release date for voice chat with Splatoon when it's coming out in July. But color me very concerned. Leaked screenshots this morning indicate that there might be a prequel in the works for Life is Strange. Life is Strange was an episodic release from Square Enix in 2015 about a teenage girl who can rewind time. This got a lot of buzz when it came out. It's one of those games that unfortunately I missed out on. I never played, but I had heard from a bunch of people that it's really quite great. Good storytelling, episodic content that actually proves that episodic can work, a compelling narrative. It's one of those ones that's on my list of shame because I had heard such great comments about Life is Strange and just never got around to it. For whatever reason, it just never made my playlist. But there already was talk from Square Enix about a follow-up to Life is Strange, a sequel. But these screenshots and concept art that have leaked indicate that it might be characters and situations and time periods that exist before Life is Strange, the timeline in Life is Strange, which would indicate a prequel. So either what Square Enix meant by follow-up is a prequel, or this is a different project that we're getting a sequel and a prequel to Life is Strange, or this isn't anything at all. And these screenshots are just concept art that never made it into the game we saw. Remains to be seen, but it's pretty exciting for Life is Strange fans. It seems like Square Enix recognizes that this game was popular and was a hit, and they are continuing with the franchise. I played a bunch more of Star Trek Bridge Crew last night, and I'm starting to think that this game might be the killer app for VR. It is that good. It is that fun. I only played with four players, which I think is the only way to play it, which may be the thing that keeps it away from being the killer app, because it's tough to get four players in VR at the same time. I have not tried just queuing up a game with randoms. I've been playing with my friends. Fortunately, I have three friends that all have Oculuses, and so the four of us scheduled a time and got on and played Star Trek Bridge Crew all together, and that is really the way to play it. I think social in VR is going to be massive. Just seeing the physical presence of your buddy in VR is fun. We spent, I'm not joking, we spent maybe a half an hour just sitting in the lobby with our avatars, just goofing around, making weird hand gestures, and just being silly. That already is fun, but the game itself is a blast. I had only played, as of yesterday when I talked about the game, I had only played through the pretty hefty tutorial mission, but now we've played several missions into the main campaign. Things get really woolly and wild right away, and the heightened nature of having to work together in a crisis moment makes the game so much fun. I've played several of the different roles now. You have Helm, which steers the ship in a really cool way. You set how fast you're able to go, but that's determined by how much power you have to your engines, which is determined by the engineering player. And you can also, you steer by kind of using your finger to trace on the virtual pad a direction, and then that moves the ship in very slow lumbering turns, much like a big battleship. But it's fun. It's fun to kind of get into that situation where you have to line up your trajectory and punch it into warp speed by grabbing the lever and throttling it forward. That's all a blast. But when you get into a dogfight, when you get enemies on your screen and you're trying to keep them in phaser range and you're trying to avoid their attacks and you're flying around the system avoiding mines and avoiding environmental anomalies that can cause damage to your ship, all of it available in 3D on your heads-up display that's on the panel in front of you, man, it's a blast. Meanwhile, tactical, which I played all the roles at this point, but tactical is weapon systems. It's deciding when shields are up and down. So you find yourself in these missions where you're trying to save as many people as possible who've been jettisoned into escape pods, and you have to get close enough to them to energize your transporter to transport them off the escape pod and onto your ship. And the only way to do that is to lower your shields, because you can't transport people through the shields, so you have to lower your shields. But as soon as you arrive at the location of the escape pods, we're detecting some weird signals that may be a cloaked ship. Sure enough, the Klingons materialize out of deep space, and they start attacking you. So you got to keep those shields up to prevent your ship damage, but you got to keep the shields down to get the people off, so the captain, who is sitting behind all the other players in virtual space and has access to the objectives of the mission and knows all the information of all the systems, is barking out orders. I need engineering. I need more power to shields. Engineering, I need more power to engines. Raise the shields. Lower the shields. All right, I want you to target the Alpha 2. I want you to fire photons when ready. It is so much fun. We are working as a well-oiled machine. My friend who's playing the captain is barking orders. I'm flying the ship around. My friend who's on tactical is trying to load the photon torpedoes. My friend who's on engineering is trying to jam the enemy Klingon vessel's shields. And the moment the shields are down, we fire those torpedoes, blasting the ship into oblivion, which leaves us a tight window to be able to beam all of the survivors of the escape pods off of the escape pods onto our ship by lowering our shields. But there's a ticking clock, because there's a star in this system that's about to go supernova, which is why the people got into the escape pods in the first place. So we're trying to get as many people as we can, but tick-tock, because that star's going to go supernova and we have to warp out of here before it happens, or we will be obliterated at the same time. Come on, that is incredible. And the fact that you're in VR, in physical space, you're using the touch controllers to manipulate physically all of the controls on a starship bridge, it's a wish come true for a Trek fan, and even somebody that wasn't a huge Trek fan. It's awesome. The new Need for Speed has been officially announced. We got a trailer, we got a release date. It's going to be called Need for Speed Payback. And it is coming out November 10th, 2017. This is from developer Ghost Games, which has a long storied history with the Need for Speed franchise. But Payback looks like it is really embracing the Fast and the Furious fiction. It's got a crew.
His family is everything. Family.
I've got a crew of racers that make their own cars, that race against the cops. Looks like big crashes, big fun. It will be an open world game, a big, large open world environments for you to drive around in, and there will be car customization. So you'll earn money during the campaign in Need for Speed Payback, and then you will spend that money on souping up your cars, on buying new cars. There will be three different characters to play as: Tyler the Racer, Mac the Showman, and Jess the Wheelman, who team up to get revenge on a cartel that runs the criminal underworld of the fictional city of Fortune Valley. This cartel is known as the House. So you got heist missions, you got car battles, you've got car pursuits. It looks a lot like what I like most about racing games. Those arcadey, action-y crash stuff. I like my burnouts. So I think this looks really, really good. They're going to be showing Need for Speed Payback off at E3 in just over a week at the big EA Play event in downtown Los Angeles. I will be there. I have a hands-on appointment with Need for Speed on Saturday the 10th. So you'll hear me talk about that game on this channel. So be sure to favorite newest, latest, best, so you don't miss any of that, I will be doing tons of updates from E3 all week long. It's going to be huge. We're ramping right up. Again, Need for Speed Payback coming out November 10th on PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One. This is the first Need for Speed title since 2015. I think it's going to get a lot of attention and looks pretty darn cool based on the trailer. We finally got some details today about Nintendo's online subscription service that they will be offering on the Switch home console. They originally announced that the Switch online subscription service would be launched this year in 2017. It is not. It has been delayed until 2018. We don't know when in 2018, but we do know that in the meantime, online play on Switch will be completely free. So that's some silver lining for people anxious to play, because Splatoon 2 will be hitting. So any online play on Switch right now in Splatoon 2 will not require a subscription, but still does require that smartphone app, which I talked about at length yesterday. So they are going to be running all of their online lobbies and voice chat through that smartphone app. So you'll have to have a smart device alongside you while you play Switch games online. When the service finally does launch in 2018, it's priced pretty competitively. It's only $19.99 annually or $3.99 a month. You can also opt for a $7.99 version for 3 months. Now, when you compare this to the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 versions of online services, Xbox Live Gold, PlayStation Plus, it's a big difference. You're talking $59.99 per year or $9.99 a month for either of those services. They don't require that smartphone app integration, but pretty much point for point, Nintendo Switch Online is going to offer a lot of the same things. You're still going to get free games. There's a selection of retro games that they're offering on the Switch. The first few of those are Super Mario Bros. 3, Balloon Fight, and Dr. Mario, old NES games. And maybe the value proposition for a old PlayStation or old Xbox games is a little heightened. I mean, you're talking about games, much bigger games, like Assassin's Creed 3 this month for Xbox Live Gold. But you're still getting games for free on it. You're still getting discounts. You don't get cloud saves on Nintendo Switch Online like you do with PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live Gold. And you're not able to stream your gameplay to any other devices. But for the most part, that's a pretty compelling value proposition. Just $20 a year to be able to play online with Nintendo Switch. Now, are they going to have the library of titles to support online play? We know about Splatoon, of course. Will Mario Odyssey offer online play? What other kinds of games are we going to see? Obviously, Mario Kart will support it. Mario Kart and Splatoon are pretty compelling reasons to play online. Are we going to get a Super Smash Bros. Port announced at E3? That would be a pretty awesome way to unveil the service in 2018. If at E3, Nintendo said, hey, when this service rolls out next year, it will roll out alongside a Super Smash Bros. Port that will have new characters or new features on the Switch. I think that would be a pretty big push for this service. But even without that push, Nintendo looks pretty strong at that low price point. I think the value proposition alongside these other services is a compelling one. It just needs that stable of games. It needs Nintendo Switch to keep expanding its library in order to make this thing a worthwhile yearly purchase. But for big, huge fans of Mario Kart or Splatoon, I think they're going to be pretty happy at this price point. Now, what we need to know is exactly how it's going to function, how easy or difficult it will be to connect with your friends. Because this smartphone app integration, as I railed against on yesterday's episode of Newest, Latest, Best, gives me pause. I am not particularly excited about dealing with that. It just seems like such a hassle, especially on a portable console. If I have to have my portable console and I have to haul out my smartphone and connect it up and connect it all together and have a second cord going to my earphones, man, that's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fun. It's going to disincentivize me to just hook it all up to play. I want an easy, quick solution. I should be able to just plug my earphones into my system and rock and roll and be able to listen to my friends talking and communicate easily. So as this gets closer, as we move into 2018 and we see the rollout of Nintendo Switch Online, some questions need to be answered. But what do you think? Excited for $19.99? I am still loving Dead Cells on PC. I'm playing it. It's in early access on Steam, but it is a very polished game at this point. Hopefully you heard me talk about it last week, talking about my love for Dead Cells. It's a game that's really gotten its hooks in me, and it's such an awesome experience. This is one of those Metroidvania roguelike games. I guess they're calling them Roguevanias now. And I'm having a blast with it. You know, I've spoken about how much I loved Rogue Legacy, but there hasn't been one of these games since that one that's really gotten its hooks in me, and I think I know why that is. I think Dead Cells and Rogue Legacy did several things very right in this genre. Because roguelikes and platformer roguelikes, these roguevanias, can be kind of frustrating for me. I enjoy the skill challenge of these games, but sometimes they can be a little aggravating. But what Rogue Legacy and what Dead Cells do right is they reward commitment, reward perseverance, and every time you die, it doesn't feel like a punishment. It feels like it's an opportunity. And every new run through the dungeons is full of improvisational moments. I can plan my experience through Dark Souls, for example. I can play Dark Souls, and I can be very excited about the build that I'm going to do with my hero. I can be very excited about how I'm going to take down that boss. But I have a very specific plan. I purchase the weapons that I want. I go to the area to get the upgrades that I need, and I attack the boss very methodically. But with Rogue Legacy and with Dead Cells, I am having to change those plans on the fly, and it feels like an opportunity. It doesn't feel like a burden to change my plan on the fly. A drop of a crazy new weapon will land, and I'll be given the opportunity to now have that kind of attack power. I will switch things up by the kinds of power-ups that I'm receiving and the kinds of places that I'm exploring, not knowing what's around the bend, not knowing the exact build that I want. Maybe there is something that I know I've looted before or upgraded before that I'm hoping to get on this go-through. But in the case of Rogue Legacy, the entire behavior of my character changes from run to run. And in the case of Dead Cells, it's the layout of my build. It's the layout of my equipment that imposes gameplay style on me. But I like that because it makes it fresh and makes it new. It makes it different every time. And so it's affording an opportunity. It's like an offering that the game is giving me when I find a chest and I get a really cool new weapon or new blueprint that I can turn into a weapon. It opens up the game in fresh new ways. And that is what keeps me coming back for more. That's what mitigates the frustration, is that each new run has untold mysteries waiting for me. It's not just bashing my head against the same wall. The walls move, the challenges change, and every new run is magical and unknown to me beforehand. It's a discovery each time, and I love discovery in video games. So check out Dead Cells. It's fantastic. It's still in early access, so I can't completely recommend it because I know some of you wait for full releases to buy games. But it is certainly worth your attention if you even remotely enjoy these kinds of Roguevania games. Last week, I did my big rundown of what we can expect from E3. It took a week. We went into all of the big publishers and all of the big third parties that are doing press conferences E3 week, which is right around the corner, guys. I'm getting so hyped. I'm getting so amped for this year's E3. It should be a really fun show. But I talked about what we could expect. I talked about some of the things that maybe I'm hopeful for. I would love to know what you guys are excited about for E3, what you're hoping for. But I thought today would be fun to talk about things that might not be super likely, but would be my biggest wish for each of the major publishers. So Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, what one thing for me would be the coolest announcement they could make? Now, I don't know that these are likely announcements. This is more my pie in the sky wish for what we could see at E3. But I'll start with Nintendo. In a lot of ways, I think Nintendo has the opportunity to be surprising and exciting and really blow people's socks off. I know we're going to get Mario Odyssey, a lot of Mario Odyssey, and I'm very excited to see more about what that game is. But I think the obvious wish, the obvious pie in the sky, and it's like this every single year with Nintendo, is a new Metroid. And I know that's kind of the obvious pick for me to go with here, but I think a new Metroid Prime on Switch, first person, portable, in high def, there is really nothing that could make me more excited on that system than that game. And I think with the Wii, it would have been a Metroid Prime with a bunch of waggle functionality tacked on. With Wii U, we could have had a high def Metroid, and I fantasized about using that Wii pad to be some sort of scanner in the environment. That could have been a cool bit of functionality. But now we finally have Nintendo circling back around to a system that makes sense to do a solid, challenging, hardcore Metroid Prime game like they had back in the GameCube days and not compromise. Really make it an open world Metroid first person experience. No gates between worlds, no gates between areas. Lend some of that Breath of the Wild ingenuity into the Metroid world. I don't expect it to be coming out anytime soon, and I kind of don't even expect them to announce this. But that would be, I know people are looking forward to a Super Smash Brothers on the Switch. I think it's probably pretty likely we're going to get that port announced. And I'm very excited about Mario, as I said. Odyssey looks cool. But for me, the thing that would get me jumping out of my seat is to know that at least it's coming. I can't imagine they haven't been working on some sort of Metroid property. Make us excited. Get us amped for Switch. Talk about portable Metroid Prime with great graphics, full open world, tons of cool power-ups. Make it happen, Nintendo. Okay, next up, let's talk Sony. Again, the known knowns, to borrow a phrase, are already very exciting. We know that God of War is going to be there. We know that Spider-Man is going to be there. These are games that I am absolutely thrilled to see more about. We know Detroit, the new David Cage game, is going to be there. These are games I'm very excited about. But what we don't know are any PlayStation VR games. I think we're going to hear more about PlayStation VR this E3 than we have in any previous E3. I think the sales of PlayStation VR have been solid, and we're going to hear more PlayStation VR exclusive titles. I think Farpoint proves that Sony can make AAA exciting, solid, worthwhile experiences on PlayStation VR, and I think they're going to double down this year. They've got that PlayStation Aim controller. We can see more great shooters, but that's not my pie in the sky. That's not what I want, although I think that would be super cool to see more Aim controller integration, more support for that peripheral, because I think it's a really great way to be in VR. But what I have been so encouraged by this last week playing so much Star Trek Bridge Commander is social. Social on VR is the future. It's so fun to see your friends in a virtual environment to play cooperatively with them. And I think Star Trek Bridge Commander proves that you can do social really well, that it's extremely fun. And not only that, but you can do games that are kind of slower paced, that are more methodical, but because you're sitting there with your friends, They are immediately fun. Werewolves Within is another great example. Both of them from Red Storm, by the way. Kudos to that studio for figuring that out. So this is what I want from PlayStation, from Sony at their press conference. I want a brand new PlayStation VR exclusive title, a fantasy set title where I get to play with my friends, move through a fantasy world. We are a party of adventurers, maybe a party of wizards who have to take down, solve puzzles, move through the environment. But it's not kinetic. It's not fast-paced. It's not Twitch. You know, it's not arcadey. Maybe there's some fun combat, but I would much rather be with my friends. These escape rooms on VR with Vive, there's a bunch of escape rooms. Sony could do something similar to that, create an online multiplayer. It's basically Star Trek Bridge Commander is kind of an escape room in a sense. Those things are so fun. Make that happen, Sony. Give me more PlayStation VR content this E3, but surprise me. Give me kinds of games that don't work for a regular PlayStation. Give me these exclusive, slower-paced, cooperative, fun experiences. I would go gaga for that. All right, Microsoft. What is the Microsoft pie in the sky? Now, obviously, it's all about Scorpio this year. They need to give us compelling reasons to buy Scorpio. And really, the pie in the sky would be Scorpio is at a low, reasonable price. It includes VR support and is amazing. I mean, that's what I'm looking for from Microsoft. But from a games perspective, what is that pie in the sky thing that would make me jump out of my seat and applaud at the Microsoft conference? Well, Crackdown 3, we don't know much about it at all. We know it exists, but I would love for it to be the killer app for Scorpio. I would love it to be – it shows the splendor of what Scorpio can be and get back to the roots of what Crackdown originally was, which is fun traversal gathering orbs. So that's one of the known knowns. We know that Crackdown 3 is a thing. We're expecting it to be – at the show, we expect it to be a centerpiece of the Scorpio launch lineup. I certainly hope that's the case. But what else? What would be the pie-in-the-sky game that could make Scorpio an instant buy, the killer app for Scorpio? I'm sure a lot of people would say Halo, a Halo game, or at least some idea of a Halo project coming on Scorpio and knowing what they could do with a Halo built from the ground up for Scorpio. I'm sure Halo 5 will be playable on Scorpio and will look better and will have a constant frame rate and be even 4K and all that stuff. I'm sure they will show that as proof of the power of Scorpio. But I'm sure people want that new Halo. For me, what I'm looking for from Microsoft is something akin to what they did way back in 2005 when the Xbox 360 was first generating some momentum. And Microsoft came out on stage and said, we got not one, but two big role-playing trilogies coming out on our system. We got this thing called Too Human, which didn't really pan out. Only one game came out. I actually liked Too Human a lot, but it did not fare well. It never made it into a trilogy. But then they said Mass Effect. Two big sci-fi, huge role-playing game trilogies from story developers that you know and love. That is what I want for Scorpio. I want them to come out on stage and say, we have big plans. We got this role-playing trilogy coming out over the lifespan of this console. Or, you know, we're investing heavily into a new IP that we have so much faith in that is going to, we have huge plans for it. It's an epic scale and scope, and it is only possible through the power of this intense new box that we're putting out, this Project Scorpio box. It looks better than anything else you're seeing. It has size and scale beyond anything else you're seeing. we've partnered with a developer that we're excited about. Maybe it's one of their first party developers. Maybe it's Rare or somebody. Rare is, you know, they're obviously working on Sea of Thieves, so probably not them. But we've doubled down on the kinds of experiences you can expect only on Xbox, and they are big, they are massive, and they are ambitious. And that is the tone that we're setting for this new upgrade to the Xbox One. Ambition. Do you want to be on the very cutting edge? Do you want the most powerful thing in the world? Do you want games that can only be at their best on the most powerful thing in the world? Here it is. Here's what our plans are. This game is going to be massive. It's going to be a part of a trilogy. I want them to shoot for the moon. I want them to be the Babe Ruth pointing to the stands and hitting that home run or trying to swing for the fences. Come on, Microsoft. You have the most to gain. Give me something extraordinary. Give me something inspiring. Give me something of a size and scale and ambition level that nobody else can touch this year. Since it's Sunday, it's time to check in on some call-ins. Remember, you can always send me a call-in by using the Anchor app. It's super easy. Just record your voice using the call-in feature, and I get to hear your voicemail, and we incorporate that into the show every single week, so keep those call-ins coming. Today's first call-in comes from the GD Radio Show. He's got some strong feelings about the new Need for Speed. We talked about Need for Speed Payback, which was just officially unveiled this week. We'll be seeing more of that at E3. I do have an appointment to see Need for Speed, so I will be talking about it a lot. But the GD Radio Show, he's not too impressed.
Am I the only person who sees like the Need for Speed franchise becoming more or less like a Madden type thing? Like every year, it's like, oh, there's a Madden game. Oh, cool. Hey, there's more football players. Hey, look at that. They added another spin move. Woo. You know, and with Need for Speed, it's pretty much the same thing. Like I think there's a free one in the App Store. And it's pretty much the same thing as what you described, more or less. I like the original ones. Like the first two, I think were really, really good, especially for the time. I know they're old as buds, but the first two were amazing. They were more, I don't want to say serious, but, you know, you had some nice cars. You got an Acura NSX, which I loved that car, and, you know, sort of more normal tracks and things. But these days, it's just steadily become like a Madden franchise thing.
Well, you know, you're not wrong. I don't know if Madden would be the example that I use. I think there's a lot of these annual releases. Sports franchises, of course, yeah. EA is doing it with their Maddens, with their NHLs, their FIFAs. It's a successful formula, but there's a lot of companies doing the annual release. Call of Duty gets an annual release, and sometimes they're not much more than adding a spin move. It depends on your perspective, I guess. I think seasoned, avid Madden players will say adding a spin move is a huge deal, or adding some sort of new mode or tweak on existing AI, or improving the way that you play that game in small increments is actually impactful because they are very invested in the final product. But I take your point about these annual releases, and Call of Duty is one. Up until last year, Assassin's Creed was another, and they took a year off to try to make the next Assassin's Creed be more impactful, be bigger and more interesting. It's been a little while since we've had a Need for Speed. This isn't quite an annual series anymore, but I take your point about racing games and how they may sort of start feel a little samey. But I think what you saw with Forza Horizon versus the mainline Forza games is a differentiation. You know, Forza Horizon is having these DLC packs like Hot Wheels and Blizzard Mountain. They really carved out much more of a personality for that franchise than the mainline simulation Forza series. And I think Need for Speed is trying to do the same in its own way, is carving out personality. I think taking the inspiration from the Fast and the Furious series and really creating an over-the-top story-based racing game using the trappings of a racer to tell a real narrative through line. And I think that's kind of an interesting take. And it certainly is much more about chases than the other racing games. I think Need for Speed has always sort of carved out its own niche in the chase element of racing. And I think people really dig that, the cars versus cops type idea, which is very much the early Fast and the Furious movies. I think there is enough different here with Need for Speed Payback to warrant some genuine excitement from me. It definitely feels more in the spectrum of what I'm looking for from a racing game, which is an arcade racer that's kind of over the top and fun. But this annualized release pattern is an issue in the industry. And I think when you see stuff like Assassin's Creed taking a year off to try to give developers a little more time and not feel constrained to that yearly release, I think there is some fatigue in the buying populace with some of these games. And I wonder how long it will be until Call of Duty feels the need to take a year off. I think the first time their sales really dipped, well, I guess last year their sales dipped a bit, but if they see a real hit in sales, maybe there will be this sort of year off reboot idea. Madden and sports titles will never get that because roster updates, the seasonal nature of the sport that they're simulating, I think, lends itself to a yearly update. And it's become such a standard now for those games that you're really not going to see any shift. But I do agree that there is a problem there. And I think these developers who are forced into that yearly release cycle, it's a challenge. They don't have the luxury of being able to delay a game like we saw Rockstar do last week with Red Dead 2. You take 5 years to make something, it's going to be really, really good. You have the time to stretch out and create something. And I think with some of these games, I mean, there's only so much you can do with racing a car, right? Ultimately, we're creating very, very accurate simulations, beautifully realized car models, physics that's pretty darn near perfect. There's not much you can do other than adding these bits of flair of, hey, it's a different kind of story or a different kind of theme or a different kind of feeling. I don't know. I don't have as much of a problem with it as you seem to. I'm much more interested in the series like Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed taking years off. I think that does more good for the franchise than even a racing game or sports franchise taking a year off. Next up is a great call-in from frequent caller-inner, Eric from EFP. He's got a game that he'd like to see announced at E3, and this does sound pretty great. What a cool idea.
Hey, Jeff, Eric from EFP. I would love to see a VR Ghostbusters game. I know you're a Ghostbusters fan, but imagine four people playing as a team of Ghostbusters. It'd be even cooler if somehow it was done in like your local city and it had landmarks or something, but VR Ghostbusters. That's what I want.
Awesome, Eric. Thanks for the call in as always. I mean, I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan, as you said, and I think this would be phenomenal. Now, there are already some Ghostbusters VR games. The coolest of them, which I have not tried, but I've heard is really neat, is a Ghostbusters VR experience at The Void. Now, if you don't know what The Void is this really cool location-based VR destination that you go to. It's kind of like going to a laser tag place or, you know, something along those lines, a Dave and Buster's, I guess. But it's an entire building that's fitted out with physical features that are mapped into the virtual world. So there's these experiences that you put on a VR headset and a backpack and you walk around with a gun, and there you'll walk up to a control panel and you'll reach your real hand out and touch something that feels like the virtual control panel that you see inside the headset. So, you know, if you trigger something and it shoots gas at you, there'll be fans that shoot air at you, so it'll feel like you're actually getting the sensation of what you're experiencing inside VR. It's very cool. All about adding more senses to the VR experience. Well, one of the things that they're offering at The Void, or were for a while, was a Ghostbusters game. A very short experience, but I've heard is really cool. And especially since you're walking around with a backpack and VR headset, the backpack, you know, feels like a proton pack, but it's actually the computer that's running your VR simulation. So it all works thematically. I've been anxious to try it, but there's not a void in my area. I really want to give this one a shot, but that does exist and I've heard is really cool. In addition to that, there was a very short, like $7 Ghostbusters PlayStation VR experience that actually they said was going to be episodic and was going to just be the beginning of a series of Ghostbusters VR experiences. It's called Firehouse. I did not try it. I have to be honest. It looked pretty flimsy. I didn't want to get disappointed by it, but it was one of those early sort of tech demo-y proof of concepts for PlayStation VR, and maybe we'll see that realized further at E3. Maybe they will roll out a fully fledged VR Ghostbusters game. I actually think that's a pretty cool idea. I might steal that for one of my predictions on DLC, because that's a pretty neat idea. What I would like to see with a virtual reality Ghostbusters game is for them to take a page from Star Trek Bridge Crew and understand that you don't have to create this kinetic shootery experience. I think the temptation with a lot of Ghostbusters adaptations in the video game realm, especially first person, is to turn it into a shooter. But Ghostbusters never really was that. I will grant you that in the new female Ghostbusters, which I really liked, there was a lot more action. There was a lot. It was much more of a shooter. So maybe if they did that version of Ghostbusters, it would make more sense. But the original Ghostbusters film, those guys were pretty inept, and the shooting was clumsy, inaccurate, and it certainly wasn't action movie choreographed. You know, it isn't like a shooter in a video game. It isn't just point your proton pulse cannon at the ghosts and shoot away. It's much slower paced. It's much more strategic. And I think that if you created a Ghostbusters VR game that borrowed a page from Star Trek Bridge Crew and made it about cooperation, that one player has to disperse the trap, and another player or two has to hold the ghost in place with the proton accelerator and make sure the beams don't cross and capture the ghost. And it's very methodical and requires teamwork, requires me doing my job and you doing your job. That's really the fun of Star Trek Bridge Crew. If you could translate that into the Ghostbusters experience and figure out ways to have everybody doing their part and create interesting dynamic missions that require that kind of synergy, that kind of teamwork, oh man, that would be an extraordinary experience that I would get super excited about. I really think that Bridge Crew can be a template for an entirely new type of VR game that isn't really possible. Well, it's not that it's not possible. It's just not as fun outside of VR. But in VR, where you can do slower things and seeing your friends in the same virtual space cooperatively, you can do things on a slower pace and with a much more methodical pace than ever before. I think it's a great idea, Eric. Thanks for the call-in.